Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to inspiring women who help us to change our day, if not our lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Goldie Rocks, also known as Sam Hall. Hello and welcome, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me. What a treat to be on this.
Oh, what a treat to have you on. Sam Hall is a multi-award winning radio presenter, a world acclaimed global DJ, a TV presenter, a producer, columnist, journalist, and a former model. Well, get you, Sam, and still so young.
Oh, I feel about 105.
Oh, not at all. And I'm looking at you in your fab studio there. You have a whole wall that I just suddenly looked at like John Legend behind you in your beautiful gold and pink with a pink flamingo. In fact, you've got lots of pink flamingos. Can you just describe your lovely setting that you're in there?
So, I've just moved house and we've bought a rather ramshackle, shall we say. That's probably a charming way of describing it. 1920s house by the river in Surrey, just outside of London. So I'm lucky enough that I get a whole room just to make my office. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put everything up. Why the hell not? So this is what I've been doing during lockdown. Obviously, everything's going virtual now. And I've been asked to do so many like virtual DJ streams. And I was really reluctant about it because I just don't think you get the same fucking energy as doing it live with real people. I really didn't want to. And then I was like, you know what? When I think the severity of the situation really sunk in, I was just like, bugger it, come on. And I was like, but if I'm going to do a live stream from home, I'm going to make it special.
You funked it up. I'm going to actually up my game and go and get some stuff.
I basically panic bought radio, home studio equipment and disco balls.
I'm coming straight round to your house as soon as lockdown is over. So Sam, you are better known as Goldie Rocks. And how did that name come about then that you're going to share with the audience there?
Oh, goodness. You know what? It's such a long time ago now. It's funny. It's surreal. These sort of alter ego names always become part of you without really, you know, realizing it. Actually, an ex-boyfriend thought of it. I had really long waist-length hair. There weren't that many women DJs around at the time. And I wanted something that people always remembered me for my hair. And I was like, oh, yeah, something to just play off it. You know, Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Goldie Rocks. And it just worked and it clicked and it's been with me forever now. It's quite surreal in a way.
You started in drama and theatre arts at Goldsmith Uni. You went on tour with music journalism at the age of only 16. How did that come about?
I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I just knew from a very, very young age that I had to be in the music world. And I didn't know if that was going to be in a presenting capacity or if I would be like a stagehand at a music venue, but I just was obsessed with the live music world, like fascinated by it. And yeah, pretty much started doing music journalism. You know how it is, writing away for free. When I was 15 and 16, got some really cracking gigs, was doing, you know, write-ups for NME and a brilliant website called Rock Feedback. And yeah, got sort of, I didn't know if they quite knew how old I was, but never mind. Got a chance to go on tour with The Killers for their UK tour to talk about this sort of like brand new band from Las Vegas, and did so. And yeah, I suppose it was a bit like trying to recreate that film, Almost Famous, you know.
Oh, wow. You see, you had that passion and drive from young. And I think that's what happens. I think everyone has a gift in that way, isn't it? In terms of they have a passion, they have something they really want to get involved in. And isn't that brilliant that you've done that? You've had an incredible time. You've always had a passion, as you say, for live music and performance. You've had a phenomenal radio career, presented your own weekly radio music show, The Selector, which has a lot of love, doesn't it? It's got an audience of over 4 million listeners in 44 countries, and you've been to most of them, haven't you?
Selector was such an incredible opportunity because, you know, that's always, I just wanted a show, once I'd figured out I wanted to do journalism, I just desperately wanted a show where I had complete creative control. And as I'm sure most radio bods listening appreciate, that's very rare, actually, to get a show that you have complete creative control over. And we really featured everything, live sessions, DJ mixes, record label features, festival features. And when I started the show 10 years ago, we were in 6 countries. And at its peak, when it was, I was in charge, it was, 46. I left the show in October last year after a decade of on air. It was just such a brilliant, incredible experience. And I'll always be so grateful for the British Council for giving me that opportunity and all the bonkers adventures I got to have.
I mean, it's taken you all over the world, Mexico, Nairobi, Malawi. I know a special place is in your heart. Club nights out and sell out mammoth gigs. Workshops in all sorts of incredible places, Kenya, Albania, Kazakhstan, And Mauritius, you've been to all these places. And Olympics-wise, you hosted a special edition on the official Olympics pop-up radio bus at the 2012. And that was quite a year because you actually DJed the opening ceremony of the London Paralympic Games in the Olympic Stadium. 85,000 people, including the Queen, who you've actually met, who's on the wall, and I'm going to ask you about that. And a billion people watching. I mean, wow. That's awesome.
I still think whenever people say now, like, you know, what's your career highlight? And it seems weird as someone in my mid-30s to already be talking about my career highlight. I think it'll always, no matter what I do, it'll always be the Paralympic Games. You know, my dressing room was next to Stephen Hawking's. It was just the most surreal, glorious feeling. And I know that everyone that took part in that games feels the same, that it was like the electricity in the stadium, the camaraderie, you know, all of us together. It was such a proud moment to be British. You know, they really nailed those ceremonies as far as diversity and inclusion and representation. And like, it was just marvelous. And yeah, DJing in that huge arena and hearing the roar of people, you really feel like Beyonce.
You've done so much. I can't believe it. And so young. I can't believe it. It's because you started so young, isn't it? It's amazing. So you've had huge accolades in the press. The Evening Standard said you could be the most influential woman in pop. The Guardian said you're responsible for bringing cutting-edge music from the British underground to the rest of the world. You presented specialist dance shows on Capital Extra, FM, the Ministry of Sound Clubber's Guide, have your own pop-up festival stations, Secret FM, Best of All Radio. I mean, you must be really struggling in lockdown without all these parties and late nights, aren't you? You're looking very well.
This is the first time I haven't been on tour. And when I say tour, I mean, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend, pretty much from May till October. You know, it would have been the Great Escape last weekend. And that sort of always marks the start of festival season, really. And then I finish kind of the first weekend of October when I beat the charts. It is exhausting. You are this burnt-out wreck by the end of it. Although there was definitely a moment of feeling flooded with emotion and really overwhelmed, I pretty much had 48 hours where all my paid work for the next 6 months was cancelled. And that was a really dark 48 hours. It was really overwhelming. And especially as I'm sure a lot of freelancers will appreciate, you just think, oh dear God, like what, you know, what am I actually going to do? Am I even going to have a career to go back to after this? But now I've sort of gone through the full stages of emotions through to anger and frustration and grief. Now I'm actually really enjoying this time to use it to be still, to think about creative projects that I would have never had a chance to get my teeth into if it hadn't been for this moment.
And you've been doing some virtual gigs as well. So you've been leading, DJing and dancing for people that are socially distancing or people that are already in a community somewhere.
I'm starting very gently and very slowly with this. So I'm not sure exactly when this is going to come out, but I'm doing a big virtual gig called Airwave with my Classic Ibiza tour. Because, you know, we spend the summer DJing to like 7,000 people a show. And obviously all the gigs have been moved to 2021. So we're doing a virtual gig with a 32-piece orchestra and me DJing and all being streamed at once. So fingers crossed the internet doesn't buckle up. But it'll be really something special.
And with the people they're allowed to be with.
It's all quite surreal, but I think...
Amazing experience, though.
Yeah, and also I just think so, it's so incredible that people are saying, oh, it's... Someone made a good point. It's about physical isolation. It's not about social isolation. And I think in these times, it's more important than ever that we keep talking and communicating and staying in touch, because it is quite easy to sort of slip into hermit world. I think people need to be a bit gentle with themselves about being super productive. You don't have to write a best-selling novel or, you know, be in the best shape of your life during lockdown. We are in crisis, like the world is in crisis. And to give yourself a bit of space and time to actually acknowledge the situation we're in. And I think it's very important to sort of really reflect on where we're at. In a rush to get back to normal, consider which parts of life are really worth rushing getting back to.
Very wise.
Yeah, I really think this could be the start of a phenomenal cultural revolution.
That's so true, you know, and it gives people the chance to stop and get off their life that was before and decide the bits of it that they want to keep to go forward. And that can only help people at home because, you know, when people look at, you know, your life and some of the things you've done, I mean, you're DJing, incredible. You've been all over the world and done some of the best parties. So I'm going to ask you about that. Now, you have had a love and passion for DJing as one of the most hardworking DJs in the UK since, was it 2004? you started?
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
So were you making mixtapes from even younger than 14 in your bedroom then?
I was very fortunate to sort of win a work experience internship with John Peel. So I started doing that when I was 16 and would go up and, like, you know, try and be helpful, but sort of probably get in the way of it. But I got to sit in on all the sessions, learn a lot from him just about sound, you know, about not being frightened of genres you didn't understand. And I think just really thinking outside of the box creatively. I learned a lot from John. The DJing really was, I wanted to start a club night when I was at university. I wanted it to be a chance to showcase new exciting bands I was interested in. Yeah, we had the Block Party and Mystery Jet and the Klaxons and all these bands that went on to do amazing things. And really, I DJed because I couldn't afford to pay a DJ. You know, I was only a student. And then actually, it turned out I was quite good at it. And that sort of took off more than everything else.
Oh, wow. So it was a happy accident. So, and you must be one of the rare female ones around the world, or is there quite a circuit of a lot of women doing?
Oh, there's a huge circuit now. I mean, I think certainly when I started, there was only really, like, really hard house DJs like Lisa Lashes and that kind of stuff. And then as far as slightly alternative sounds, you had some girls called Queens of Noise who have gone on to do amazing things. Tabitha's a filmmaker in LA now, and May Reed manages Florence and the Machine, you know, but really, sort of like an accessible music level, I was one of probably the first. When people say there isn't the talent pool of female DJs out there, I really scoff, because there's just as many as men. It's just making sure we have the opportunities and visibility that men do.
Definitely. It's been described as theatrical rock and roll, even by yourself, isn't it? You've lived the best life. You've been across five continents with your DJing, from Ibiza, as you say, Glastonbury, Nevada Desert, Cannes Lion Festival, you name it. Incredible parties as well. Giorgio Armani and all the who's who. Mick Jagger, you've done it all, haven't you?
Yeah, I have done. I've partied a lot. This is probably why I'm quite happy about lockdown. I'm happy just to have a rest. Like, just give that girl a cup of tea. That'll put her feet up.
Wow, you've had such fun, though. What were some of the most weird and wonderful things that you've actually done? You did an igloo disco snowboarding in Austria, snow bombing.
Do you know what? I think out of all the sort of private parties with, like, celebs and fancy people, I mean, ultimately, famous people, like super famous people, you know, not just a little bit famous, but we're talking like Barack Obama and Beyonce, that level of famous, that it's kind of almost like this alter ego, surreal thing. But they're still just people. And when you see them in a situation that it's a private event, or if it's in someone's home, it's funny because they fuss about the same stuff that everyone else does. Like, is there going to be enough catering? Oh, my friend's too drunk. You know, oh no, this has happened, that's happened. It's all the same drama that it would be just at a house party somewhere else.
So you've been to Beyonce's barracks parties, have you?
Oh no, I haven't. I haven't been to Beyonce's house. No, not yet, not yet. I think the most surreal event I've ever done has probably been for the World Economics Forum. And I can't say who the party was for, but it was a private event in Davos. And because it was just like, oh, there's that prime minister, and oh, there's that powerful person. And it was just, you know, it's so surreal to see that many key players of the world just doing like the robot on the dance floor. It's very surreal.
I hope you got it on video. Let's share that with the group. So you've done all of this, and Richard Branson, I hope that was to his private island, was it?
It wasn't on his private island, it was in Monaco.
Oh, what a shame. That sounds fabulous as well. So you're enjoying the piece. You were a professional model as well in your very busy life. And your experience to presenting a lifestyle documentary on body image. Do you think people will change the way they view their body image after lockdown? Because you were exposing life behind the lens from your former model days and helping children in the classroom, really, weren't you, in terms of understanding body
image? We worked on that project with Del Templer, who's obviously the absolute Wonder Woman responsible for Human Planet. So, like, this incredible filmmaker. And it was something she was really passionate about. I must stress, I was never, like, a full glow model. It was only, like, you know, dipping in and out, shall we say, a couple of campaigns
for people like Nike and Boots Number 17 are pretty big brands, I must say, very modern.
But it was, you know, it wasn't, I was no Kate Moss by any means. I think the thing that I found so interesting is just the amount of distortion that goes into images that end up on magazines, that really to show young people how extreme it is and also how completely unachievable it is. You know, 2 minutes of Photoshop editing, you can change someone to have a different skin color. You know, you can essentially transform your race. Like, it's just, it's unbelievable the amount of stuff that goes into editing. And it, I suppose it is my concern. You know, I'm thinking about maybe starting a family now. And I think that's one of my biggest concerns with my future untaken offspring yet. How are you going to approach social media, and how are you going to approach body image and editing? It's a really complex story to get one's head around. I personally, with lockdown, have found that I've just become so much more relaxed about body at the moment. And I wonder if that is because I sadly, suspectedly suffered from COVID-19 quite early on. And it really knocks you for six. And I think that was a real wake-up call for me of like, oh my God, my body's so amazing. Like, look at this amazing thing that's managed to cure itself and become strong again. And certainly lots of elasticated waistbands and flopping around and not wearing makeup every day. You just think, oh, give yourself a break and just lighten up on yourself a little bit.
Definitely. Health is so important. So how do you feel now? Are you okay? Did you had it badly?
This is the thing. It's kind of, it's an interesting one because I never went to hospital, thank goodness. But it really, you know, from being, I consider myself quite a fit, healthy person. You know, if anyone see me DJ on stage, I really jump around and thrash about. And it, you know, I'm quite strong. And it just feels like you're breathing glass the whole time. And like, just the level of exhaustion afterwards. And I think also the sort of psychological effect of being stuck in your house, being ill, feeling very vulnerable, not knowing what's happening with your work. It's a lot to contend with. I find it quite frustrating when some press are like, oh, it's just like a bad flu. And if you're young, you'll be fine, because that's just not, you know, that's just not the case.
Gosh, I'm so glad you're okay. And how brilliant you're having a rest now. And actually, you know, that'll help a lot of people knowing, you know, it's a leveler. It can affect anyone, whatever age, whatever, you know, wherever. And we all need to take care of ourselves. And thank goodness you're okay. You know, this podcast is about adversity and setbacks and challenges that people face and how they come back from it and actually think differently and behave differently and have new coping skills and resilience. So that's brilliant you're sharing that. And you love helping youths too, don't you, with their radio direction at the BBC, including me, although I'm not a youth at all, and helping young DJs. You went to Egypt to meet musicians, DJs and young people interested in a broadcast career. So you've got a heart of gold as well as your name, haven't you, helping all these young. Is that why you like helping youths? You want to have some use of your own. You've just got a natural, you just want to help people.
I think there's a mix of things. Firstly, you know, I found it really hard to break into the industry when I first started. You know, I grew up in the countryside and my parents didn't work in media or entertainment or anything. I had no ends. You know, I was really going, it was all off my own back. And it was a really daunting task to know where to even begin. Like I said earlier, there weren't many women visible in broadcasting or in DJing that were really doing exactly what I wanted to do. And it's very hard to sort of aspire to do something if you can't see anyone that looks like you. And so I think that was a key thing for me, that I really wanted to meet young people, disadvantaged people, people overseas, to be like, well, actually, you can do it, and here's how. And I just feel like from a karma perspective, I really feel that it's people's responsibility to like to pass on knowledge, especially to women. Like, I do a lot of work with young women, grown-up women, all kinds of women. I'm a member of the Women's Equality Party. I'm always involved in the annual March for Women every year in Parliament Square. And I just think it's our social responsibility. We've got to all lift each other up, and lift each other up in a real practical, hands-on, helpful way, not this just sort of hashtag, I'm fixing your crown, sister, like actually giving people connections and advice and like proper, real, tangible things. And then we'll just keep evolving, evolving, and getting stronger and stronger.
Well, you're doing such an amazing job, Sam, and giving so much back. You are, and you're being so humble. And you've made guest TV appearances with shows on Adele and Lady Gaga. Have you met them both too?
I've met Adele several times. Lady Gaga, that was more just like a voiceover sort of reflection thing on my music journalism when she first came out. That was a while ago now.
Gosh, you've met and worked with them all. And even as a music producer, you've worked with Aaron Audio on remixes and the son of Trevor Horn, who obviously did Video Kill the Radio Star and produced Kiss from a Rose with Seal. So, you know, you've got an A-list lineup behind you. Which strong women or men have inspired you then?
That's a great question. I mean, as a broadcaster, I just loved Zane Lowe growing up, listening to him. I loved how energetic he was. I loved that it wasn't this really kind of, you know, stare down your glasses, scratch your chin and think about vinyl way of thinking about music, that it was exciting and frantic and a bit all over the place. And I suppose as a broadcaster, I really wanted to emulate him. And I was very like rock and ready, out there, bit shouty. And actually, when you start doing a regular radio show, you very quickly realize that it doesn't do you any good just copying someone else's presenting style, and you really have to find your own voice and your own way of expressing things so that you're authentic and genuine. That's your USP, you know, that's what really makes you unique. And sure enough, my way of presenting, which is actually not very like Zane Lowe at all, it's really accessible, it's really friendly and smiley, you know, everyone's allowed in my gang, everyone's allowed to listen to like really cool music, and you don't have to be really indie or rock and roll or a dance kid or whatever. If you just love it, you love it, and that's great.
And that comes across, and actually that's what everyone wants, isn't it? Particularly in this environment, they want friendly and smiley and everyone included, because everyone's feeling a bit rubbish, aren't they? And we are so going to pick them up with this podcast. So can we talk about your passions? But first, we just want to say, if any empowering female brands would like to partner with our show, please contact me at nikkibannermanradio.co.uk or support us on Patreon and volunteer us a prize for a cup of tea and even join our private Facebook group, Influential Women Podcast. So what do you do when you're in your time off?
So I think there's two sort of main passions at the moment I'm really focusing on. One is, as I said, we've moved out of London, which was a really scary big jump for me, having been there for such a long time. But it's one that during lockdown, I'm absolutely savouring with every bone in my body. We're surrounded by fields and right on the river, and I've started attempting to kayak. I'm not very good, but it's really lovely. And so, yeah, we're renovating this house. And, I'm doing all the lockdown cliches. I'm making bread. I'm making slow gin. I've become a passionate gardener. But I think I guess my main passion project at the moment is I've become a meditation teacher.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So I just trained in November I finished my training as a meditation teacher, specializing in sound meditation or gong baths or sound therapy. And I've started a new thing called IO Project. It stands for Input Output. And the aim is really to try and make meditation and like mental well-being health practices really mainstream, really accessible to people that maybe struggle to meditate regularly.
Yes, suddenly you haven't got the festivals and you've got the calmer environment and you've got the time. That's brilliant. Well, good luck with that. You've also done some serious podcast work in terms of helping and mentoring youths. In terms of crossing borders, you've collected music to bring back to the UK. You've been to Libya to work with the Youth Forum in Tripoli, to Jordan with the charity Oxfam and the largest refugee camp in the world. And you even did a documentary on that, or a podcast, didn't you, in terms of getting interviews and bringing music back. That must have been incredible as well.
That was one of those life experiences where, you know, you start doing something and you're like, I'm passionate, I can do this, I've been doing radio for years. And then you very quickly, as in within minutes of entering the camp, I'm like, I am so over my head. Like, you know, this is so beyond what I've trained for or I'm ready for. This is really serious, proper journalist stuff. And like, oh God, can I do this? But you're in then now, yes. You know, and you just have to like do it and try your best. And, you know, I was really, really proud of the audio that we made from that trip, the work we did. But it was, it was terrifying. And you don't realize actually how dangerous refugee camps are. They're really dangerous places. They're really unpredictable places. A week before I entered the camp, the Jordanian army had to go in with tear gas into a kindergarten on site. So that's basically, you know, like four-year-olds using tear gas on four-year-olds because they'd started to try and stone their teacher. The amount of trauma and stress and all these things that all these people are trying to process in one tiny space without enough aid, without enough supplies, all of these people processing trauma, all these people processing grief. It's a really difficult place. And I have so much respect for incredible organizations like Oxfam that work with these camps. And since that trip, I mean, Oxfam will always have my support. They ask me to do anything and I'll do whatever they want me to.
Obviously moved you, you know, know, significantly, seeing their lack of amenities, desperate need for aid, and you made a difference to them with your radio podcast. Good for you. You're a spokesperson for Lake of Stars Festival in Malawi in South Africa and their microloan projects and AIDS pop-up centres. And you've got a number of charities, four or five other charities you work on as well, haven't you? Gosh, when do you sleep? You've got the Samantha Dixon Brain Tumour Trust, the Copperfield, Oxfam, you mentioned Macmillan Cancer Support, and Amnesty International. I mean, that's just phenomenal. You're one busy and very giving woman. So I'm glad you've got some time for yourself. So what's your mantra then in your meditation? Have you got a mantra for living your life?
That's a really, really good question. I think at the moment, you know what I'm doing with some people when I'm doing virtual sound meditation is that I'm really focusing on I'm willing to let go. And if you'd asked me 2 months ago, I would have not said that. Like, that's not really how my busy brain thinks. But at the moment, I think the situation that the world is in, I'm just willing to let go. I think sometimes people hold, myself included, you hold so tightly onto old patterns of behavior or old ways of thinking, or just this is how things get done, that there's no room for progress or things to evolve or to grow as a person.
So we've talked about some of your amazing awards. You've got on the wall there, best radio shows, best DJ, Sony Radio Academy Awards. I mean, honestly, you've done so much. It's unbelievable. And you've talked about your next goals. So lastly, what wisdom would you give to influence women or men with coming back from any setback, including the current crisis we're in?
I think there's a couple of things that you just have to give yourself a minute to really sort of like process what has actually happened. If you're constantly, if you behave in a reactionary way, you don't necessarily make real choices and you're just sort of panicking and you jump from one career choice to another career choice. Or, you know, in the case that we're in, just like panicking, you're being like, oh, I need to make money. How am I going to do this? You know, in the case of COVID, take a moment. Don't be frightened of like pausing. I think sometimes in this industry, it's like always thinking about the next thing. I don't agree with that personally at all. If you don't take time to reflect and really think about who you are and what you want to say and how you want to say it, you'll be saying the same thing that you said 30 years ago, and that gives no opportunity for growth or progression or to evolve. I always say this, be authentic to the real you, who you are right now, and that won't be the same you that was the case 20 years ago, you know? I think in this time, the world desperately needs authentic, inspirational, interesting voices, original voices. And this is your chance. Like, this is such a glorious opportunity to create something completely original, to take risks, be creatively daring, think outside the box. It's the real time for change. So use that wisely and like do your passion project. Do the passion project that you think no one's going to listen to. This is the time to make it, you know?
Thank you so much to you, Goldie Rocks, also known as Sam, for your uplifting life story, extraordinary achievements in music, getting the world feeling happier with clubbing, dance, entertainment and future meditation to look out for, particularly in these tough times, and for helping so many youths with their futures and helping so many of our listeners today. Thank you so much, Sam. This influential women's podcast is co-founded and host-presented by exec producer Nikki Bannerman and award-winning Juliet Nichols, and this episode is produced by Safran Mirza. Please subscribe for free, keep listening for more podcast guests and our 3 years of back catalogue on our channel on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify and your usual podcasting platforms. And if you love what we do, join our tribe.